Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, week three is in the books. Has your team fired their coach yet?
No. I had that experience last year, though, so we got that out of the way.
So you can relate.
I'm still playing the road game, by the way, Joey. Still playing the road game.
Power cable for the mic has still not shown up. It is... You're only about 3 hours from home. Somehow the power cable is halfway across the globe. We, you know, don't really know how that works. Space-time continuum with the supply chain and all that. Who knows?
Yeah. It's in Taipei or something.
It started there, and then we got it, and then it got back there somehow. We don't really know how this works. Anyways.
Weird.
Mike, we had a lengthy and eventful slate of games in the ACC this weekend. A lot of fun games to watch. I hope you got a chance to watch those as we did. Mike, can we just take a couple of liberties, and that's not a pun on one of the games we're going to talk about later. Can we just take a little bit of a liberty here and start with one of the less interesting results of the weekend, but one I think that people want to hear about?
Number 20, Ole Miss 42, Georgia Tech nothing. Joey, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, this was embarrassing again. This is the third out of four games against Power 5 competition that Georgia Tech has been shut out. I do remember, at the end of the Paul Johnson era, there was a lengthy streak that was alive and well that Georgia Tech had not been shut out in a football game since 1997, I believe it was. And before that, they hadn't been shut out at home since, like, apparently the late 50s, I believe it was the stat that came up a couple days ago. Jeff Collins has now been shut out four times as head coach at Georgia Tech. The first one, I don't know if you remember, Mike, came at the hands of your Hokies in 2019 in a 45-0 win in Atlanta. So both of those streaks out the window. They have since been shut out three more times, most recently by Notre Dame, Georgia, and now Ole Miss. Just a pathetic effort. Horrible effort. And speaks to just how this is over. We're done here. He's going to be fired at some point. I don't know exactly when. It is a timing issue at this point, it seems like. My understanding is that there's some questions around, is it only Collins that's going to be gone, or is the athletic director, Todd Stansberry, going to be gone with him? That's very much in play. And, the order of how you do those things and who gets to hire who is kind of in question, I think. And so... it is almost impossible to imagine Collins coming back from this at this point. Part of it is just watch the effort from this team. One of the most embarrassing things I think I could imagine about this game was Ole Miss gets the ball to start the game, goes five plays, 74 yards, touchdown. I mean, just knife through hot butter, whatever. It was bad. They just went straight through the Georgia Tech defense. Georgia Tech gets the opening kick, gets the kickoff back, three plays, 9 yards, punt. Except that punt doesn't go anywhere because it got blocked again. Georgia Tech had another punt blocked for the third time this year. There were a number of Ole Miss defenders both on that play and on several plays throughout the game that were just running completely unblocked. It was a total system failure from Georgia Tech. And you saw, I think you saw last year, and I think you're starting to see it again, a decent amount of quit in this team, Mike. So if you're looking for gambling interests, just remember Georgia Tech might quit on this coaching staff at almost any point during a game, and things are going to get really out of hand. So I don't know. I was really not impressed with the effort from the offense. There were a lot of miscues again with blocking and just some of the simple things. I felt like defensively, it felt like they were just one step behind Lane Kiffin the entire game, just chasing guys around, took bad angles, weren't making tackles. Really not a great effort there. just wholly unimpressive. You had fans, I believe, booing the team going into halftime because Jeff Collins, once again, bungling some of the clock management stuff. You had basically the entire stadium emptied out after the third quarter. It's over. It's so bad, and I don't know. I don't know what is a fair expectation of Georgia Tech in year four coming off the option, even with the COVID year and you know, all the other things that we talk about with Georgia Tech, but I know it's better than this. I know it's better than this, and I know we deserve better, and at some point soon, I think we're going to be in position to at least have some hope to get better, but for now, man, it sucks. It sucks. It's not fun to watch. It's not fun to be a part of, and I'm just – we all know where this is going. It's just a question of when we're going to get there. So that's the thing that I'm trying to keep an eye out for. There were some rumblings that it might happen today. It seems like that has not been the case, and he might survive another few weeks. I think the really popular target they might shoot for is the bye week, which would come after the Duke game. And nobody's going to look at anything questioned twice if you lose to Duke and then get fired before the bye week. Like that, you know, everything works out there. So I don't know. Just not good for Georgia Tech at all. And it seems like this season's going to go downhill in a hurry.
Yeah, this game sucks. Okay, so they have a pretty tough schedule the rest of the way. And it's tough not because the other teams are necessarily really good. It's more because Georgia Tech's really bad. I mean, over under like 1.5 wins the rest of the way. And I say that, and I couch that for the fans and listeners at home. Georgia Tech goes to the bounce house and plays UCF next weekend, right? So on the road to UCF. They follow that at Pitt, home against Duke, bye week, like Joey just mentioned, UVA, which we'll get into UVA here in a bit, at Florida State, at Virginia Tech, home against Miami, at UNC, at Georgia. I'm not sure that Georgia Tech wins more than one game the rest of the way. And that's there are some games that are winnable, right? North Carolina's defense never shows up. So, I mean, even Georgia Tech can score on North Carolina. Virginia Tech is in a first year. It's on the road, but it's first year head coach. Florida State, we'll get into them shortly, but Jordan Travis's health now in question. UVA is bad, right? Duke's first year head coach. So, I mean, it's not like they're not winnable games on the schedule, but Georgia Tech might be worse than all of those teams, right? And if you have the effort that we just saw against Ole Miss and the quick factor come into play throughout the rest of the year, then it's hard to imagine this gets any better than like 3-9, even if you give them like a couple more wins. So this could get ugly in a hurry, Joey.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, there's about four games on the schedule left that I'm not ready to take a Sharpie and write an L next to.
And
like you said, I mean, I think UCF is flawed, and I think if you have a good game plan and execute it, that's not a guaranteed loss. Duke has looked really good so far, and if that keeps up against, you know, slightly tougher competition, your only hope is that they come back down to earth a little bit and towards what we expected of them. But if they're anything like what they have been, yeah, you can just take the Sharpie and write the L next to that already. Like you said, Virginia Tech both have their flaws, especially on offense. You know, at that point, a low scoring game, like anything can happen. But like, I mean, otherwise, I just don't see it. I don't see it. This team is, you know, I think about this team physically, mentally, emotionally on a lot of levels. And, there's really only one word that comes to mind, Mike, and, let me spell it out for you here. Yeah, dude, they're soft. They're soft, man. It's not good. Not good at all.
I'm sorry that this is happening to you.
I appreciate that. It's, you know, it's sad, and it sucks. It's not fun, but, you know, it is what it is. And you know what it's like. You know, it happened to you last year, so you get it. You know, but again, there will eventually he will be gone. There will become a coaching search. There will be some hope. I don't think Georgia Tech's a bad job. I don't think that Georgia Tech is going to have a hard time finding good candidates that are, you know, going to bring hope to the program and can turn this around. And again, I mean, the roster is still not bad. Like, the roster is in pretty good shape. It's like, I think it's like fifth, maybe sixth in the ACC in terms of talent on the 24/7 sports composite. So, like, whoever steps in here is going to have a chance to pretty immediately make an impact. We'll just have to see, you know, if that actually happens or not.
It speaks to Collins and his staff's lack of productivity. Let's just say that they've been able to recruit a team that's good enough to be in the top half of the ACC in terms of overall talent, but still every time they go out onto the field, it's like a totally incompetent product. Mm-hmm. So it's poor. Things are going poorly.
Yeah. Not great. So buckle up, Georgia Tech fans. Going to be a fun 9 weeks ahead. Make sure your bourbon is ready. Ole Miss 42, Georgia Tech nothing. Where are we going here, Mike? Where from? Where to? From here. I can't talk right now. This is going great.
This is what happens. Newborns. Mm-hmm. You and I recording late at night. This is what happens. Florida State 35, Louisville 31 on Friday night. Jordan Travis was hurt in this football game, Joey. Florida State rallied the troops in the second half, played much better offensively. They were able to win this football game in a wild affair. Wild football game. Malik Cunningham. Look, Florida State gave Louisville an opportunity to drive down the field and win this game late. And Malik Cunningham threw one of the worst interceptions I've seen in the ACC so far this year.
It's pretty bad.
That's why Louisville lost football. It was pretty bad.
That was why the other reason is that Louisville is like a lot of teams, not only in the ACC, but maybe in the country, that does not have anybody that can cover Johnny Wilson. Johnny Wilson, we found out in this game, is the 6'5", 235 wide receiver. 6'7", 235 out of California.
Yeah.
He goes 7 catches for 149 yards and 2 touchdowns. Had about a 70-yard catch on a post that got them down to the 5-yard line. Had another where Tate Rodemaker, the backup, basically throws a jump ball. And when you're 6'7", and you can jump like that, nobody can cover you. So, Johnny Wilson made a huge impact for Florida State, especially in the second half of this game.
As Cam Underwood would say, Johnny Wilson is elite at running post routes against Louisville.
From the left side of the field.
Oddly specific, but okay.
And yet again, that's what happened. Malik Cunningham for Louisville. I feel like, you know, you mentioned he had a pretty bad interception. It was a pretty impressive play from the Florida State defender to make that interception. I mean, full on like NFL looking interception. Got both toe tap, you know, both feet down on the toe tap. But not an advisable throw. But overall, I thought Malik was pretty good, other than a few bad moments. You know, Louisville seemed to struggle a little bit in the red zone at times, really punching it in and finishing drives. And then their defense, I don't know if they just ran out of gas or what it was. I mean, giving up 14 points in the fourth quarter, and Florida State even missed a field goal in their final drive prior to the just, you know, the little kneel down at the end of the game. Like, their final three drives, three plays, 75 yards, touchdown, 8 plays, 75 yards, touchdown, 6 plays, 37 yards, missed field goal. From inside the Louisville 20-yard line. So, I mean, they were getting themselves into scoring position. Louisville's defense ran out of gas here.
Yeah, and that field goal, the game wouldn't have been over, right? Because Florida State would have only been up a touchdown, but it would have put them in a much better situation and put less pressure on the defense. But Malik Cunningham throws that pick, you know, a few plays into that drive, and, you know, that was it for Louisville. I come away, like, every time I watch Malik Cunningham play, I'm really impressed by, like, his talent and his athletic ability. But I tweeted this on Friday night. Like, Malik Cunningham is a really, really exciting player. I also think he's kind of average. And the reason why I say that is because, and I know where he stands, right? I know where he stands in terms of Louisville football. I know that, you know, he's broken some of Lamar Jackson's records. I know he's also been there a little bit longer, but he's been a very productive quarterback. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the school, right? You can make the argument he's the best quarterback in the history of the school in some of the categories, right? So, you know, anytime you're mentioned in the company of Lamar Jackson, considering what he was able to do at Louisville, you're a good quarterback, right? The reason why I say he's average is because Cunningham, I think it's everybody's got these really high expectations for him, right? To be kind of this top three quarterback in the conference. He's always mentioned, it's like, well, Louisville's got Malik Cunningham. You know, anytime you have Malik Cunningham, you always have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a really bad turnover, mm-hmm. or a really bad couple turnovers. And I'm just kind of left scratching my head. Or he has a performance like he had against Syracuse at the beginning of the year, where I'm like, a quarterback that's this good shouldn't be playing this poorly, right? So it's kind of this roller coaster ride with Cunningham where it's like, okay, man, that quarterback that I just watched, you know, on Saturday looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Then he'll come out like the following Friday or following Saturday and he'll look, you know, as a passer, just kind of like silently mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a roller coaster with Malik Cunningham. I understand a lot of that is a product or a byproduct of the team he plays for. I understand that. But there's just too many like weird plays and weird performances out of Cunningham in terms of like his career at Louisville that makes me think that he's not that player that everybody kind of builds him up to be that covers the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm at. Nothing against Malik Cunningham. Again, exciting player to watch, but I still come away at the end of the day being like, for all the excitement, it's a lot of average. I watch a lot of average play. That's kind of where I'm at.
He's like a superhero, right? But specifically like Aquaman. He's like a superhero, but like a really underwhelming superhero. I don't know. That feels like a bad analogy, but I don't know. I'm sticking with it.
Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy. You know?
If you've watched The Boys, he is the deep. He's
yeah, right. He's
like really disappointing superhero. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like I said, like he has his moments that that really mess some stuff up. I know he was credited with a fumble in this game too. And if I remember correctly, this was kind of maybe late first quarter into the second quarter where Louisville was down like in the red zone, and the play seemed like it should have been blown dead, like badly. And then all of a sudden, a Florida State defender rips the ball out, and they're allowed to keep it. And it was like, hold on, what? You know, what just happened? And so I don't know. There's a couple of weird officiating things in this game, if I remember correctly. Again, that's been feels like years ago. You did mention, yeah, Mike, that Jordan Travis goes out of this injury with goes out of this game with an injury. Yeah, I think it was an ankle injury. It was in the first half. He was in street clothes in the second half, so there was no chance he was coming back. I don't know that we know the severity of that injury or how much time he might or will miss. Tate Rodemaker struggled early, taking over for him, but then seemed to really settle in the second half, made some big throws at times. Florida State in general just I think I tweeted this out, or I certainly texted it to you. Like, they look better than they did
a
year ago. They are improved, man.
They do.
And it's not been like a night and day thing. It's just been this like slow build, and they are slowly getting there to where, I mean, they're definitely going to make a bowl game. And with this ACC, right, they might, I don't know, they might win like eight games.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned this after the LSU game. You know, Florida State wins a thriller there. And you said this had a lot of Notre Dame, Texas vibes from what was that, 2016 maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of Notre Dame Texas vibes where it's like, man, I'm not sure if both of these teams will make the bowl game, but this is like the game of the year. Florida State has their flaws, right? They clearly do. But healthy Jordan Travis has been pretty good, right, through three games. I mean, he was good in this game against Louisville before he got hurt. He had the one interception, but it was 13 of 17 passing for 157 and two scores. He was really good throwing the football in this game before he got injured. Mm-hmm. And he's taken a lot of steps forward. And Florida State as a whole, I tweeted this on Friday night, a sign of progress for Florida State is they have been consistently losing these types of games the first couple seasons under Norvell, right? Year one and year two. They were losing these like really close one-score games, right?
Grabbing defeat from the jaws of victory, that kind of thing.
Right. Right. They were Scott Frosting pretty hard the first couple seasons. They're not doing that this year, right? They win a close game against LSU. They now win a close game against Louisville to move to 3-0. They're winning the one score games now. And that's a huge sign of progression, because a lot of like you look at Scott Frost's record, you know, before he got fired at Nebraska, and it was like, I think it was 5-22 in one score games as a coach in Nebraska, which seems impossible. But what happens, some stuff is left up to chance, but what happens when you get into these one score games is that when you win one of them, you start gaining confidence that you can do it. And Florida State needed to get that under their belt, and they did in a big spot on Labor Day against LSU.
Mm-hmm.
They got that big win. We talked about that on that recap. We were like, you know what? Norvell needed this. Like, he had been searching for this, and he got it. And since then, Florida State's been in the spot now where they go on the road to Louisville. They're in a tight game. They lose their starting quarterback. Rodemaker comes in as a backup. Again, you mentioned it, Joey. Looked rough early, but really settled in. Offense kind of backed up behind him. Trayshawn Ward was really, really good. 126 yards rushing in the game. You know, really gave him a spark in the second half, rushing the football. I know he didn't score, but he had a really good, you know, really strong game running the ball. Like, Florida State rallied behind their backup quarterback. Never believed they were out of this football game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sign of progression for Mike Norvell. They're building something there. And it's also a testament to the patience that needs to be shown for a program as prideful as Florida State to say, you know what? The back end of Jimbo didn't go well. We hired Willie Taggart. Didn't go well. We got to give Norvell some time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's building a program. He's in year three, and they're 3-0, and they're going to be in a bowl game for sure this year. I don't see any way they're not in a bowl game, given their schedule and how they look so far. And this is a team that can absolutely win 7 or 8 games. And who knows, you know, if Jordan Travis, you know, comes back and he's healthy, you know, what this season could be for Florida State. But I think this sets up for a pretty big 2023, regardless of what happens this year. I think expectations will be really, really high for the Seminoles next year.
Yep. I think so. One other thing I'll mention about Louisville here before we get out of here was that this team, I mean, this game in particular, we saw quite a bit of them shooting themselves in the foot. 11 penalties for 81 yards, 3 turnovers. You mentioned the Malik Cunningham interception. There was I mentioned the fumble he had. The other thing I was going to mention was the penalties. I mean, there was a drive late in the second quarter. Louisville is up 21-14, gets the ball back with about 4 minutes to go and has a chance to do the middle eight, you know, score kind of thing and kind of put some pressure on Florida State going into the half. Start of that drive, Mike, false start, and then run for 10, run for 9. And at that point, you still don't have a first down because it was first and 20, and you've only gotten 19 yards in your first two plays. Then they run for 7, get another false start. So you had 3 false starts in your own building on one drive. Like, that's the kind of thing that will drive me nuts if I'm a Louisville fan, and I am. So,
yes.
So things like that, you know, the turnovers again, it's like this is a very winnable game for Louisville, and you found a way to lose it. And that's the kind of thing that is going to basically end up with Scott Satterfield, I think, going in a similar direction that that Jeff Collins is going to be going. I think
– yeah.
I would be surprised if this turns around in a way that Louisville is happy with where they stand to the point that they keep Scott Satterfield around. So we will see at this point. But, you know,
they can do better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Florida State 35, Louisville 31. Let's keep moving, Mike.
Number 24, Texas A&M 17. Number 13, Miami 9. Joey, I'm pretty sure it's 11:02 p.m. on Sunday evening. I'm pretty sure Mario Cristobal just ran the ball in the red zone again on like 3rd and 8.
Mario Cristobal was hoping he was going to get the chance to kick, what, 3 more field goals to maybe win this game?
Here's the thing, right?
Touchdowns are overrated.
Here's the thing. It's almost like the entire country last night was like, oh my God, does Cristobal always do this? Joey, yes, he does always do this.
Uh-huh.
Just the East Coast has been asleep when he's been doing this, like, throughout his career. Like, he's known for doing this to Oregon. It drove Oregon fans insane. And now the entire East Coast now woke up to that because, you know, they played a game in prime time last night. Everybody saw kind of what Cristobal's made of. I think Cristobal's a good coach. I think from a game management standpoint, he's absolute ass. And we saw that last night, right? There was a sequence there in the second half, and I think Miami was down. Was it 17? Was it 17-6 when it was like third? It was like third and six inside the 10. Miami runs the ball. They like to run the ball between the tackles. They get stopped, and then they kick a short field goal. It's like if you're running the ball on third and six from inside the 10-yard line, you would expect that Miami would maybe, I don't know, go for it on fourth down would be the expectation. Otherwise, it feels very odd that you just ran the ball only to kick a field goal to remain down two scores.
It was 17-3. And by the way, that was a drive where Miami had started with the ball first and 10 on their own 25-yard line.
Yep.
With about 10 minutes and 20 seconds left in the third quarter. They finally, like you said, they run the ball on third and goal from the 6-yard line with less than 5 minutes to go. So they sit there and like eat up almost half of the third quarter on this long, drawn-out drive. They run the ball, get 2 yards. It wasn't even like a, oh, that was creative. That was going to get somebody in space. That might have scored. It was like a handoff up the middle kind of thing and got stuffed. And, I mean, I don't know. It was very uncreative. It was like, okay, well, they're going to go for it here. And then they didn't.
Right.
Kicked a field goal, and it was like, oh, now it's instead of being a 2-score 14-point game, now it's a 2-score 11-point game. Like, good job, Mario.
Dumb. I mean, just all time, just galaxy brain, dumb. And Texas A&M, we mentioned they have offensive issues. They started a different quarterback in this game, Max Johnson, son of NFL quarterback, former NFL quarterback Brad Johnson, transferred over from LSU. He was not the spark plug that A&M was looking for at the quarterback position.
Not exactly.
This is a bad offense A&M's got. They're bad. This was actually a very boring football game to watch. I tried to like just keep my eyes glued to it, but it was hard because Arizona State was blowing the game against Eastern Illinois. So,
I mean, this game was a lot more fun to watch when you had some action on the under.
And I really hope that the listeners took our advice on the preview pod when we were like absolutely hammered the under. It was a lock of the week. It never even got close to going over. I mean, I think the total closed like 44.5, and we finished with 26 points. It was never even close. So I hope everybody took the under.
Yep. Yeah. I did get nervous. I mean, A&M goes out first drive of the game, 8 plays, 55 yards, field goal. Miami gets it back, 12 plays, 65 yards, field goal. And then on their next drive, A&M goes 3 and out and punts. But Miami muffs the punt, and so now Texas A&M has the ball right outside the red zone, basically, and in 3 plays, they go in and score a touchdown. It's like, oh, gosh, that's 13 points in the first 3 possessions of the game. But
not ideal. Right.
That was half of the scoring that we saw all night. You know. So, yeah, just not a great situation for Miami here. I don't – like, part of the question of them kicking field goals, by the way, and this is like a subplot, is – Miami missed multiple field goals in the first half. So at that point, like, why are you trusting your kicker that much? He's 1-for-3 on the night. Like, just go for it. You need points anyways. I don't know. I'm with you. Like, it kind of felt like Mario Cristobal was not really coaching this game, trying to win it. It's like he was just looking at the down and distance and didn't really know what was on the scoreboard and making decisions off of that. It was bizarre.
And for all the For all the crap that Manny Diaz has gotten, right, for what he was able to do or not do in Miami, the one thing I will say is Tyler Van Dyke looked a lot better with Manny Diaz's coaching staff than he has with Cristobal so far. This offense has not been very good for Miami, and I think it could potentially catch up with them here in ACC play.
Yep. I think that's on the table. They racked up 70 points on Bethune-Cookman. Great. But the last 2 weeks, I mean, again, you went the entire first half last week basically without getting into the end zone. And now this game,
right,
you go the entire game without getting in the end zone.
Right.
I don't know that you're going to play that many defenses better than what Texas A&M is running out there. But
right,
it doesn't seem like this offense is really going to overwhelm much of anybody at this point. So you're going to be in closer games than you want to be. And when those games are close, and in this game in particular, like, weird things happen – you're going to be in position to lose those games, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm with you. This was a bit of a boring, kind of weird game to watch. I think this was a bit of an introduction, you know, Miami fans. If you didn't really know much about Mario Cristobal, where he came from, what his history is before this, this is the kind of thing that I think is going to be the reason that there's a bit of a glass ceiling there with him running the program. Like, you know, they'll get really consistently good, and they'll probably be winning, I don't know, 9 to 10 games a year. But when you say the U is quote unquote back, I'm guessing that's not what you mean, is back to winning 9 and 10 games a year.
Right. They're not national championship good. So, but we knew that coming into the year.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. As you said, Texas A&M 17, Miami 9. Mike, before we move on, the Georgia Tech program is in an absolute crater, and there is not a whole lot of anything good associated with it right now. I'll tell you one thing that is good associated with it, and that would be Section 103.com.
Section 103.com.
Yes, sir. As bad as things get on the field for Georgia Tech, things are still great on the internet for Section 103.com. It is the internet's best place for finding all sorts of great Georgia Tech apparel. They have T-shirts. They've got sweatshirts. They've got hoodies, something for the whole family. They got stickers, by the way. Keep an eye out for those. They've got shirts in the official Tech Gold. They've got all the official word marks on their shirts. These are things that are really hard to find anywhere else. And I don't know why, but you can find them really easily at section103.com. Started and founded by a Georgia Tech grad. And Steven, of course, is the guy who designed the ATL logo that is now on the Georgia Tech field and gets used in a lot of the marketing and such. You can find that logo on shirts at section103.com. So go do that. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. Again, understand that things aren't good on the field right now, but, you know, a lot of us are still pretty hardcore fans trying to find ways to support our Yellow Jackets. We're there for the players, and we're there for the program, and just want better for it. So if you want to show that, go get some great apparel. It's comfortable. It's high quality. It looks great. I love mine. Mike, you're not even a Georgia Tech guy really in particular, but I think you love yours, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. I do.
Bobby Dodd Stadium is your happy place, it turns out.
That's right. Also, my standard Georgia Tech shirt that I have.
That's right. So if you're anything like Mike, and Bobby Dodd Stadium is your happy place as well, or at least it will return that way once you know, we get a couple things fixed on the field there, go to section103.com. Use promo code GOACC to get 10% off your first order. Really appreciate Steven and the gang for their partnership. Let's keep moving here, Mike. The number 19 Wake Forest Steamin' Deeks 37, Liberty 36. This game was a bit of a roller coaster ride, Mike. This super weird game.
Yeah, I'll say Liberty scored a touchdown with just over a minute to go to pull within 1 point of Wake Forest. Liberty tried a 2-point conversion that failed. Wake Forest sat on the ball. They win the football game. Liberty is very well. I thought coming into this game without Connor Brewer, I was like, all right, well, you know, Wake will be fine. They'll cruise. No, Wake Forest defense really, really struggled here in this football game. Mm-hmm. Liberty's offense found multiple ways to move the football in this game. They had a pretty fun quarterback in Kadon Salter, who had 2 touchdowns in this football game, added an element on the ground. He had 72 yards rushing, second leading rusher. Hunter, their leading rusher, 89 yards and a touchdown. Like, Liberty found different ways to move the ball on Wake Forest. Wake Forest defense is still pretty bad. Mm-hmm. They surrendered 428 yards of offense to Liberty in this football game. Liberty, by all intents and purposes, playing a backup quarterback, even though I think Kadon Salter is probably better than Connor Brewer. Charlie Brewer. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Whichever Brewer.
There was a Brewer there. He's hurt all the time, and it's late. Anyway, Liberty was 4 for 16 on third down in this football game, but still managed to rack up 36 points and 428 yards of offense. That's not good for Wake Forest.
No.
I mean, you hold a team to you hold the team to 25% on third down, but then Liberty went 4 for 5 on fourth down in this football game. Wake Forest defense could not get off the football field consistently throughout the entire game. The defense could not get off the field, Jerry.
Not at all. not at all. Gave up some big plays, and I don't know. It's like they had some success at times. I mean, they did come up with 5 sacks and 9 tackles for loss in this game. Like, that's pretty good. They generated 3 interceptions. Like, that's pretty good. But other than that, I mean, that was their only way of getting off the field. I mean, Liberty was able to get yards in chunks for significant chunks of this game. Wake Forest also had a pretty brutal time running the ball in this game. They were struggling against Liberty's front, and that was something I was not really expecting. I don't think that Liberty is particularly, you know, got a particularly vaunted defensive front, you know, but Wake Forest was really struggling to run the ball. It all kind of came down to Sam Hartman, 26 of 44 for 325, 3 scores and 2 picks through the air. Again, 2 picks, not ideal, and he is as well regarded as Sam Hartman is in general. He is not immune from making some of those mistakes from time to time, throwing interceptions and giving the ball away.
No, he didn't play particularly well. I know his stats come out to, he threw for 325 yards, 3 touchdowns. That was not Sam Hartman's best game yesterday. I didn't think he looked, at times, certainly did not look very comfortable back there.
Yeah, yep. I did also want to make sure just to point out that there was a Wake Forest punt that was blocked and turned into a safety, which led us to have some kind of weird-looking scores here. At one point, that safety had Liberty pull to within Wake Forest 13, Liberty 5 was the score at one point. So that was fun. They kicked a field goal right before halftime to avoid the 5 points in the first half. But yeah, so that was fun. But like you said, I mean, Liberty, I didn't love the decision from Liberty, honestly. They score the touchdown and they go for 2 there at the end. I kind of felt like that was a situation they might should have just played for overtime. And I realized that Wake, on their previous 3 drives, I mean, had gone field goal, touchdown, touchdown, and really been moving the ball pretty well through the fourth quarter. But I don't know. I mean, it just felt like Liberty was playing with them too. I mean, they I don't know. I thought they could have hung in there and thought they might should have just tried to play for overtime. That was kind of my thought at the time, but in any case, it works out for Wake.
A little bit of a ballsy move there by Hugh Freeze.
Is Wake a top 25 team in your mind right now, Mike?
Okay, so that's a take that I had. I don't think so.
I think I'm okay with that take.
I don't think they are. And they, okay, right. Sam Hartman, second game back, had a really scary blood clot situation. And Mitch Griffiths looked good offensively in game one. And, you know, they beat Vanderbilt by 20 in game two. But, like, I have some questions about Wake Forest because, like, the offense has been scoring fine through 3 games. The defense hasn't really made a huge improvement. I think the ACC as a whole is a conference through the first, at least what I've seen out of, you know, week zero up until now. Like, I think the ACC has improved this year, right? So I don't think Wake Forest is going to be in a situation where all of a sudden they're going to, you know, step up and have kind of the easy ride to the Atlantic Division crown. Like, Clemson's defense, still really good. Like, NC State, we'll talk about them in a minute. They look pretty good on Saturday. Like, there's some good football teams, just even in the Atlantic Division. We already talked about Florida State. So, I'm not sure Wake Forest is a top 25 team. I think if they are, maybe back half of the top 25, kind of where they're sitting in the low 20s, I think is, you know, probably correct at this point in time. But, you know, I think when you consider, you know, what Wake Forest has historically been under Dave Clawson, they've always done more with less, but they've always been more comfortable with, you know, scoring with teams, right? And being able to put up 1,000,000 points and kind of living with, you know, a mediocre defense. And what scares me about Wake Forest is that, you know, you're not in ACC play doing this where, you know, you're getting into shootouts. It's a team like Liberty, which, you know, Liberty was supposed to take a step back after Malik Willis goes to the NFL. But now they step back in. You know, I mentioned the Charlie Brewer injury, and now that you know, they're playing essentially with backup quarterback. They scored 36 points on the doorstep trying to beat you yesterday. I just have questions about the Wake Forest defense, you know, moving forward. And, you know, I think Wake's going to score a ton of points this year. I think they certainly have the talent to win 8 or 9 games, but I think it's going to be more of a proponent of their schedule than anything else. I mean, they still have Boston College, Syracuse, and Duke on the schedule. But those are three games that are almost, you know, I would say layups. I know Syracuse and Duke are playing good football right now, but I think those are, you know, those three games are certainly layups. You know, we talked about the struggles of Louisville. I think that's a very, very winnable game. So, I mean, we'll see kind of what Wake Forest evolves into, but I think we could be headed for another situation this year where Wake Forest wins 8 or 9 games, but at the end of the day, we're kind of left there saying, you know what, they're probably not really all that good.
It's honestly not a bad way of looking at it. And I, like you said, I mean, no need to disparage Wake on this, you know, but you look at this schedule. I mean, there is a lot of winning potential, we'll say, from week to week with a lot of these teams that are have plenty of flaws, honestly. And to some degree, I think that's been to Wake's benefit in recent years is they play schedules that are beneficial for them and enable them to win a good number of games. And so I think there are a lot of winnable games left this season. Next week, they play Clemson, and they host Clemson at home at noon on ABC. That'll be a big popular game. I have strong opinions on that game, Mike, and we'll get to those in the preview.
It'll be interesting. It has not gone well for Wake Forest here the last few years. Let's put it that way.
Not the best. Not the best. And for what that's worth, you also might want to go out and poke around and see what the early spreads are looking like.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good about I think I want to put a couple shekels on that game, and I think I know which side I want to put them on.
Yeah. I have a feeling I know which side you're going to go with there.
I think you do too. Wake 37, Liberty 36. Let's keep moving, Mike. Can we go to like one of just the wonkiest, craziest endings of the entire day across all of college football?
Syracuse 32, Purdue 29. What the hell was this?
All right. I'm going to say something here that I really don't think Syracuse fans are going to like, and I apologize for that, but I'm just here to tell you what my opinion is. Syracuse didn't win this game. Purdue lost it.
Yes, I would agree.
Purdue, 13 penalties for 138 yards in this game, including, I don't know how, I mean, they had 30 penalty yards coming off their go-ahead touchdown that set up Syracuse with like, I mean, they had the ball at midfield starting a drive with about a minute left needing a touchdown to win. There was that. There were just a lot of things that Purdue did. Aiden O'Connell had a horrendous, horrendous decision to throw a pass that turned into a pick six. I forget if that was the third or the fourth quarter. There's a lot that happened in this game. Syracuse had, for some reason, just was not interested in defending Charlie Jones in this game. He had 11 catches for 188 yards and a touchdown. He burned Syracuse's defense over the top multiple times. Syracuse's offense was really having a time of it moving the ball, I felt like, for a lot of the day. I don't know. A win's a win, and they're 3-0, and that's great. And honestly, I do think the defense looks pretty good. But this feels like a game that should have been a loss for Syracuse. Got outgained substantially here, 485 to 306. It was just the one turnover for Purdue. But again, the 13 penalties for 138 yards, that was basically what Purdue, in a lot of ways, that's how Syracuse was able to win this game, was on the back of those Purdue penalties late in the game.
Kalo Okechukwu had the 17-yard interception return with 8 minutes to play in the fourth quarter. Syracuse had a 10-point lead at that point, and I turned the game off.
You missed a lot.
I did. Charlie Jones had a 55-yard touchdown catch. Payne Durham had a 12-yard touchdown catch from Aiden O'Connell with 51 seconds remaining. Purdue had like 7 penalties after that touchdown, so Syracuse is basically almost in field goal range when I know they needed 4 points to try to win the game. So field goal was out of question. They were almost in field goal range after the ensuing kickoff after that Payne Durham touchdown reception.
Mm-hmm.
So Purdue could not stop committing unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in the final minute of this football game. It's a big reason why they lost the game.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse has the wild finish. Garrett Trader throws a touchdown pass with 7 seconds to play, you know, to propel the Orange to a home victory. A very wild game. There were 42 points scored in the fourth quarter between these two teams. So it was a crazy, crazy game. But this is a situation here where, like you mentioned, Purdue lost this game with the penalties, right? Like, how they handled themselves as a football program down the stretch in this game, they did not deserve to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse took full advantage. Oh, by the way, after that Syracuse touchdown, Purdue had a couple more unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, so mm-hmm. Syracuse was just able to easily like kick the ball out of the end zone for a touchback on the ensuing kickoff. Purdue did themselves no favors in the final minute when the going got tough, and that's a sign of a mediocre football team when you kind of fold up when you face a little bit of adversity. And I know Louisville fans would really like to see Scott Satterfield go and Brohm come back and listen, you take on the identity of your head coach, and when your head coach is getting called for unsportsmanlike conduct penalties down the stretch of a game you're trying to win that's nail-biter, it's back and forth. Listen, man, not a great look.
Such a bad look. Purdue, yeah, that final kickoff that Purdue had, they kicked off from their own 10-yard line. Purdue had thrown a game-tying touchdown pass to, was it Payne Durham, I believe, their tight end. On the extra point, he gets caught just in the face of someone from Syracuse jawing at him, gets the flag for unsportsmanlike conduct. I guess upset over that, then before the next play even starts, Jeff Brohm gets another unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. So two personal fouls going into the kickoff that, you know, you just need one stop to win the game. I mean, just not a good look for Purdue. That was, I don't know, man. That's what I'm saying. I think Purdue lost this game more than Syracuse won it. Syracuse got a few free points on just dumb Purdue things. So they're 3-0, a win's a win, and that's great, and Dino needs it. But I am skeptical of 3-0 Syracuse. Even like going along with the theme of something's not right here, we haven't had a post-game tweet from Sean Tucker. Like, it's like he doesn't even believe it. I don't know what's happening here, Mike. Something's not right.
He might be a witness protection.
He might be. By the way, I am workshopping a new statistic. I need to like work on the marketing or the name of it. There's got to be something fun we can do with it. It is the Schrader Tucker Index.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay, tell me more.
So this game, Syracuse ran the ball 35 times, including one sack by Purdue. And there were 13 completed passes. Of those, 37 out of 48 plays ended up in the hands of Sean Tucker or Garrett Schrader.
Aligning with a take that you've had now for several weeks.
This is bizarre. So we said 37 out of 48. That is 77% of Syracuse's offensive snaps. And it was funny because you noticed, too, there were, so Aronde Gadsden the second has six catches for Syracuse. He was their leading receiver with 112 yards for two touchdowns. He was good. He had a good afternoon. I don't know how many of those plays he caught balls on a play where Schrader took the snap. His first move was to look for Sean Tucker, found Purdue did a good job. They had it figured out. They decided to cover up Sean Tucker in the passing game. And then, oh, God, I got to look somewhere else. Oh, look, somebody's open. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this sustainable? I don't know.
So far, yes.
It has been for almost a full season's worth of games at this point.
Yes.
Anyways, bizarre game. Syracuse improved. I'll say that. The defense is especially pretty improved, very good,
yes.
I think.
Right.
If they can stay healthy, they're going to have a chance to win a lot of low-scoring games this year. I'll say that at the very least.
But I have a decidedly different thought process when it comes to 3-0 Syracuse when they're winning close games and 3-0 Florida State when they're winning close games. Mm. And that's where, I want to make clear, like, the Orange are kind of scraping by, and it's fun because we've been talking about how bad Syracuse has been for a really long time, and they're clearly not bad, right? But they're flawed, and Purdue is a team that should have been able to expose those flaws, but instead they found themselves down 2 scores in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
They came back and they gave themselves a great opportunity to win the game, and they committed a bunch of stupid penalties and handed the game to Syracuse. So Orange are fortunate to be 3-0.
Mm-hmm. Fun hypothetical for you real quick, and then we'll get out of here and keep going. We got a lot of games left. October 29th, Syracuse is hosting Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse win that game?
They got a shot.
I think almost everybody has a shot against Notre Dame right now.
Oh, man. They had an interesting Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'll be taking the under in that game. I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Speaking of, they also host Virginia on is it Thursday or Friday night? What's the 23rd? That's probably Friday night.
Yeah, that'd be Friday. I like Syracuse in that game, by the way.
I think I do, too. Yep. So, but we'll get to Virginia here shortly.
Yeah.
Purdue loses to Syracuse. Syracuse 32, Purdue 29. Let's keep going, Mike.
Number 16, NC State 27, Texas Tech 14. This game was over after Texas Tech threw a first half pick six. That's mm-hmm. when this game effectively ended. Texas Tech never really had a shot here. Really impressive win by NC State, Joey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was pretty dominant from end to end, I felt like. And I think this is kind of what Dave Doran, in a way, wants from his teams. They're going to win games. It's not going to be like a high-flying, like, blowout win. But it was a little bit of a, like a boa constrictor kind of situation of like just absolutely squeeze the life out of Texas Tech. Red Raiders go 2 for 12 on third downs. Were not able to, I mean, it was like 2.1 yards per play on the run, in the run game. Like, just not great. You got 4 turnovers out of Texas Tech. So, a really good defensive performance from NC State. They scored some points early. They got up, like you said, on the pick six, made it 20-0. And at that point, it was basically over.
Yeah, that's basically when the game ended. I thought Texas Tech would show themselves a little bit better here after, you know, the thrilling win against Houston 2 Saturdays ago. Didn't end up being the case here. They really, really struggled offensively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a ton on this. I mean, just a really complete and dominant performance, I think, by NC State. We call this the dress rehearsal. Mike, I kind of think they're ready. I think they could maybe use a little bit more offensive firepower, but
yeah.
I also don't know why you would really show everything you've got this week, although we did get a little bit of a double pass situation where Thayer Thomas threw a touchdown to Demi Sumakongbe. So, you know, there was a little bit of something, but I think NC State's ready here. In 2 weeks, they will go into Death Valley to play Clemson, and we'll see if they can fulfill my prophecy that they will win the Atlantic Division.
That is the Atlantic Division championship. Is that what we're calling our shot on right now?
I think so. I think so.
Too.
If not that, I don't know. Is it one of these two teams playing Florida State later this year? Like, I don't know who else is even in contention.
Yeah, I agree.
So, NC State, good job. 27-14 winners over Texas Tech.
The Queen Elizabeth II Memorial Game of the Week. Joey, it's time. Cue up pomp and circumstance. Virginia 16, Old Dominion 14. UVA had a field goal late in this game as time effectively expired to beat Old Dominion. Joey, the Virginia defense played pretty well against a very bad Old Dominion offense. The Virginia offense looked absolutely horrific once again. And they got some issues on the offensive line. We talked about BC having issues up front. UVA's got those same issues.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, for a team that wrapped up a little over 500 yards of offense, this was, I don't know, like all the red zone performance was really dreadful from Virginia in this game. You had multiple red zone fumbles. You had a missed field goal late that would have put the game out of reach. Instead, Old Dominion goes down, scores a touchdown to take a 14-13 lead with about a minute left. And then Virginia able to get down in position and kick a quick 26-yard field goal as time expired to win the game.
Yeah.
A game that they won, 16 is more than 14, but like you left a lot of meat on the bone for all those yards you racked up and everything you were able to do. You still only racked up 16 points, and that's the kind of thing that's really not going to cut it against better teams. I felt like this was similar to that Virginia Tech game that Old Dominion won, where it wasn't like Old Dominion was incredible, but the reason they were in position to win the game was Virginia Tech just missed a lot of opportunities and made a lot of pretty brutal mistakes.
Yep.
Virginia, very similar here. The only difference was they were able to escape with the win just barely. But
you took the words right out of my mouth, Joey. I thought Virginia, the one thing they can hang their hat on is that, yep, they made a bunch of mistakes, a lot of stuff that could be corrected. They still won the football game.
Yep. Found a way.
They found a way.
Virginia's drive chart, basically, they kicked a field goal early in the second quarter. After that, for a while, here's what we got. 10 plays, 79 yards, fumble. That was one that was they were inside the 10-yard line. 4 plays, 30 yards, fumble. 8 plays, 64 yards, fumble. So that's 3 straight drives, including this one also inside the 10-yard line. 3 and out, 5 plays, punt. And then finally, 11 plays, 46 yards, field goal, and that was midway through the fourth quarter. They kicked a field goal. So, yeah, I mean, again, you racked up a lot of yards there, but didn't really get anything done with it. And that's, again, that's going to be concerns against a better team. So,
yeah, could have gone worse, could have lost the game, but could have gone a hell of a lot better in the red zone specifically.
Yep, sure could have. Virginia 16, Old Dominion 14. Mike. Pitt 34, Western Michigan 13.
It took Pitt a little while to pull away here, but they did.
It did. Now, I will say we got a tip a few hours before this game that, first of all, I will say it was from a longtime listener, and we really, really appreciated this. And I won't name them. If you've listened to this, you've heard this name before, but I just won't name them just in case. But pass along. This was, I guess, Friday afternoon. Regarding Pitt, Patty is definitely not playing. His leg injury is unknown but sounds bad. Slovis is a maybe, probably a concussion, likely down to our third-string quarterback for tomorrow. That was indeed the case as something named Nate Yarnell went 9 of 12 for 179 yards and a touchdown. Sure. Said, and then on Saturday he passed along, by the way. So it looks like we're down our starting right tackle, who's yet to play this year, our starting center, who got hurt in the second half of the Tennessee game, a starting defensive end in Alexander, who got hurt against West Virginia, a starting defensive tackle, not Cansey, thank God, both Slovis and Patty, and one of our two quality running backs in Hammond, who got hurt against West Virginia. Not great, Bob. No, not great. I am grateful now that I didn't do this, but this had me very interested in going in and putting in a couple of bets potentially on the under and on Western Michigan plus the 10, but I would have lost those bets because Pitt wins this game pretty comfortably. They were able to dominate really, and especially into the second half. So Pitt 34 once again, Pitt 34, Western Michigan 13. It's always good when you don't lose to Western Michigan 2 years in a row.
I was going to say, I mean, at least they didn't lose in Kalamazoo, right?
Mm-hmm. Big day for Izzy Abanaconda.
Yeah, 133 yards rushing.
Mm-hmm. Vincent Davis, too, added 83 of his own.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely needed it.
Yep.
Joey, let's move on. Let's talk about my Hokies real quick. Virginia Tech 27, Wofford 7.
Yep.
Wofford scored their first touchdown of the season in the fourth quarter of this football game with Virginia Tech leading 27-0, and Virginia Tech fans were really mad online about that.
Was that like before or after everyone had lunch, by the way?
Yeah, I was going to say
10:15 a.m. or whatever it was.
Yeah, 10 o'clock Central, by the way. 8 o'clock West Coast, you get it. This was a game where Virginia Tech's offense, I thought, you know, was able to capitalize and play a pretty good second quarter and then wasn't able to really sustain that in the second half. All that to say, this is going to be an offense that's going to be a work in progress for most of the year. Good news about this game for Virginia Tech is that Grant Wells played his best game as a Hokie. He was very good in this football game. You can nitpick. You can say he missed a couple throws. Sure. He was 26 of 35 for 314 and 2 touchdowns. He did exactly what he's supposed to do against Wofford. He completed passes to how many different receivers did this end up being? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different receivers in this football game caught a pass.
Wow.
From Grant Wells. That's really good. Running the football, Virginia Tech was missing Keyshawn King, who has been the team's top rusher through the first couple games of the year. He got banged up at the end of the Boston College game. They missed him. Malachi Thomas still hasn't played. They're expecting him back soon, hopefully by West Virginia. But if not, after that kind of, I'm going to call it like a mini bye, because they don't play for 10 days after playing that Thursday night game this week.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Tech fans who are mad online about the Hokies giving up a touchdown when they're up by four scores in the fourth quarter, really weird thing to be mad about. Virginia Tech's defense has been the best unit on the roster this year, like on the team, either side of the ball. Defense has been great.
Mm-hmm.
Offense still a problem, so let's keep that energy with the offense's struggles to be consistent. That's going to be an issue all year, I think. But Virginia Tech wins 27-7 is Australia.
Yep. I mean, it's always a good one to at least, you know, feel good about yourself, crack your neck a little bit, get the offense going. Going to be a slight uptick in competition next week when you host West Virginia.
Slight, but I mean, Neil Brown's going to be coaching Wofford soon anyway. So
I was going to say, not like West Virginia is, really feeling great about themselves right now either, after they got beat by Kansas last week. I guess they did beat up on Towson this week, so everyone got their warm-up game in.
That's true. Fans were concerned about that too, because West Virginia beat the hell out of Towson. Virginia Tech didn't necessarily beat the hell out of Wofford, so fans were concerned about that, because 1 + 1 always equals 2 in this sport, Joey.
Always.
Let's talk about one more. There's like one more game of substance that I think we can talk about, like, not at length, but kind of similarly to how we just talked about Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Number 5, Clemson 48, Louisiana Tech 20. It took Clemson a while to put it together once again, Joey.
Mm-hmm.
Took them a while.
Dude. I'm starting to wonder, too, though. I mean, this is the second straight game for Cade Klubnik when he has gotten in the game. Not particularly impressive.
I liked a theory that was floated on a podcast I listened to earlier this week, where is DJU the best they got? Question mark?
I mean, I heard someone mention last night, like, how great it would be if Clemson had a quarterback like, like Chase Bryce or something.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I mean, DJU might be the best they got. And honestly, at some point you start wondering, is it really a DJU and Cade Klubnik problem?
Right.
Or is this a problem of this, like, incestual coaching staff thing that Dabo Swinney has going on, where nobody on his offensive staff has ever coached anywhere but Clemson?
Yep. Time will tell. Will Shipley, 12 carries, 139 yards, 2 touchdowns. I will say this. DJU has been very good running football this year for Clemson. Like, the designed runs with DJU are working. Like, that part of the offense is working.
I think having a backup is making them comfortable running him more than they did in previous years.
Agree, and I think that's a strength of his game. I think he's good at that. He's a big-bodied quarterback that's hard to bring down. This is feeling a little bit like a KJ Jefferson, Arkansas-type offense right now, with the way the DJU's running the football. A little bit more smash-mouth, power running game with the quarterback. And I think that's because Dabo knows that his receivers can't consistently separate. Mm-hmm. So we're going to find different ways to matriculate the ball down the field and score. So Clemson wins this game by 28, as anticipated. But this took Clemson a little while to separate. And all in all, I thought DJU played fine in this game. I just wonder, moving forward against tougher competition, like, what is the ceiling of this offense still with him at quarterback? I don't know. Klubnik has not been very good over the last 2 weeks when he's been in the game. So very, very limited sample size, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody, myself included, may have overreacted a little bit to Cade Klubnik's drive against a really bad, what's turning out to be a really, really bad Georgia Tech team, mm-hmm, in the opener.
That whole like quit thing, by the way.
Yes, right.
That was the correct. Last drive of a game they were being blown out of. They might have been quitting a little bit. That's possible.
That's correct.
I mean, different week, same story for Clemson and that offense. I mean, they end up scoring points. They scored 48 points in this game, but they scored 35 of them after halftime.
Like, yeah, they get there eventually, but it takes some time, and you're not going to be able to get there eventually against some of the teams coming up on the schedule.
Yeah, you came out of halftime and you had a 13-6 lead.
Right.
Like that's against Louisiana Tech. Like
very, very bad team.
Yeah. Yep. And that's even without, I mean, you didn't really turn the ball over. Like, I don't know. I mean, Clemson just continues to be really underwhelming on offense in a lot of ways that we really were not used to seeing up until recently under them. So
right.
Clemson 48, Louisiana Tech 20. A couple more here, Mike. You want to cruise through these?
Yeah, let's do it. Duke 49, NCANT 20. I didn't watch the snap of this game, but Duke's now 3-0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and continue looking good. I mean, Riley Leonard 11 of 12 for 155 and two touchdowns. The one incompletion was actually caught. It was just caught by an NCANT defender. I don't know. I didn't see, so I don't know what happened, but I'm sure it's fine. But yeah, I mean, Duke cruised here. I mean, they were up 28-6 at halftime. Like, you know, NCANT really didn't get on the board much until the second half. So Duke continues to look good.
Yeah, for sure. Boston College 38, Maine 17. Kind of the final game on the schedule here. Mm-hmm. Boston College was actually losing this game 3-0 in the first quarter, but don't be alarmed. They rolled here. Maine's quarterback had a decent game. I don't want to try to pronounce his name, Joey, because if you look at the box score, you'll understand why I'm saying that. It's late. It's late. Now I want to get canceled. Phil Dracovic, 25-37, 320 yards, two touchdowns. Offensive line played better for Boston College in this game, but that's because they were playing against Maine. So take it with a grain of salt.
Maine's defense with 3 sacks and 7 tackles for loss in this game. Boston College, you're going to play better defenses than Maine. Maine's 0-3, by the way.
I mean, they're bad.
They lost the previous week to Colgate, 21-18, and were previously blanked 41-0 by New Mexico. So,
and New Mexico.
The fact that this
was not a great football program.
Not the best. Not the best. Not exactly Alabama. So not super encouraging that this was a game for a little while, but you know, Boston College got out without any real major concerns. So at least there's that.
Yeah.
Boston College 38, Maine 17. Mike, anything else before we get into a couple of awards?
Let's hit them.
Let's hit it. Let's see if I can get the music to work here. Oh, hey, there it is. Mike, the Go ACC moment of the week. There's no way we were going to give out all these awards without going back to Mike Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. And we got late in the third quarter. Georgia Tech's down 35-0. And defense is kind of sees what's going on here. They're not getting any help in the offense. Once again, that quit word comes up. And
yes.
Ole Miss has, I believe, a 3rd-and-14, something like that. And Jackson Dart, the quarterback, decides that he's got to get out of the pocket. He's got to start scrambling. And then decides, oh, we got to run for this thing. And he does. And in front of him is Jalen King right around, you know, just short of the sticks. Says, oh, no, we're not getting we're getting off the field here on third down. We're going to go. Jackson Dart says, nuh-uh, and goes right the hell through Jalen King. Absolute truck stick move there from Jackson Dart. So to Georgia Tech defenders, deep in a blowout, just getting run the hell over. And I'm trying to use a good language here. Run the hell
yes.
over.
Yes.
Go ACC.
Don't do what I do. It's, yeah. Went full truck stick with the game while on game. Jow Jackson.
Yeah, so go ACC to that. I don't know. Not great. Don't do that again. Mike, the Brian Van Gorder Memorial You Tried Award. Does that go to Manny Diaz? Goodness. Mario Cristobal and Red Zone Clock Management. Red Zone.
I was going to say Manny Diaz had a great day on the road at Auburn. His defense. Ooh, buddy.
Manny regrets nothing right now.
Manny's having a great time at Penn State, replacing Brent Pry. He's having an excellent time. The Brian Van Gorder Memorial Youth Pride Award. Look, Brian Van Gorder, really bad football coach. Mario Cristobal, better coach than Brian Van Gorder, but we're going to question some coaching decisions for this award this week, don't we? I think as we should. We mentioned the game management. We're going to have this 85-yard drive that took up like 7 or 8 minutes, and we're going to kick like a 25-yard field goal at the end of it and still remain down 2 scores. Is that the best use of everybody's time, including yours, Mario Cristobal? That's the question I have.
Might be.
So, yeah, you tried. You tried to get points on the board, and you got some, but not enough. You lost the game.
Yes. That's correct.
Good job, Mario. Mike, do we have a Kobe Bryant Memorial Volume Shooter of the Week?
I believe we do, Joey. Please hold. We absolutely do.
Oh?
Wrong game. Good podcasting. How about you name your team of the week real quick?
My team of the week? Does that come back to Florida State, maybe? I think that's an option. NC State looked good. I don't know. Like, the ACC did well this weekend, honestly. Like, most of the ACC's teams won. Syracuse might get that win. Might get team of the week. I think there's a couple of candidates here. Do you have a preference?
Mine's Florida State. Winning on the road, backup quarterback most of the second half, come from behind win. It's got to be Florida State.
Yeah.
That's my team of the week.
Give me Syracuse. I talked a lot of mess about them, so they can be my team of the week. I'll redeem myself here. Go Orange.
Go Orange is right, Joey. Volume Shooter of the Week, the Georgia Tech running back room.
Oh, yeah.
Hall Smith, McDuffie, 18 carries for 55 yards.
Yeah. Not a lot going on the run game there.
Not great.
Not pretty. I think that's accurate. That was not a great performance there.
Yeah, poor.
Team of the week, you said Florida State, I said Syracuse. You got a player of the week?
I got one that I'm not sure you're going to necessarily agree with, but he made some big-time plays down the stretch in the football game. His stats don't really reflect that he should be a player of the week, but I think he willed his team to victory. Garrett Schrader is my player of the week. Not great passing numbers. He was 13-29. Against Purdue, but he had 3 passing touchdowns, including the game winner. He was also the leading rusher with 83 yards rushing. He willed Syracuse to victory offensively on Saturday, so he's my player of the week.
I will say I was largely underwhelmed by him as a passer throughout that game, and I'm kind of getting that way increasingly in general. That game-winning touchdown pass that he threw was
big time.
A dime as he got smoked by a defender.
Big time.
I mean,
big-time throw.
That was one of the best throws of the weekend across college football. So, like, and
yeah.
He's good for a couple of those a game where he just – all of a sudden, a guy that's, like, you know, not throwing the ball that well, all of a sudden will just drop one in there. It's perfect.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, credit to him. He can be your player of the week. I'll take Johnny Wilson from Florida State.
I think that's the obvious one.
Kind of wheeled his team, and that's, again, a wide receiver. We don't get to celebrate those guys too often, but – He had a couple of massive impact plays that kind of got Florida State the win there in Louisville on Friday night. So I'll take him as my player of the week.
Like it.
Yep. All right, Mike, I think that's all I have on week 3. Anything else?
This was week 2.
No, week 3.
Was it week 3? It was week 3. Okay, it was week 3.
Dude, sleep deprivation is a hell of a drug.
On to week 4.
You know what else is a hell of a drug?
Cocaine?
Beating Notre Dame, apparently, because Bowling Green beat Marshall this week.
Yeah, in overtime. Charles Huff.
Yeah, that's a brutal way to come back the week after getting that win in South Bend.
That is not it.
Mm-mm. Not great. Not great. Hey, good on you, Scott Leffler. On the board with a win this year.
On the board with a win, and it's probably one of the biggest of your head coaching career, quite honestly.
Yeah. Might be up there. Yeah, definitely a bit of a head scratcher for Charles Huff and Marshall. I don't know. That seems like a bit of a roller coaster team that you might get something very, very different from week to week from them.
Yeah. The next step in their progression will be, I don't know, being consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's. Oh, is that all? Just being consistent? No big deal.
Yeah. That's something that's very easy to achieve.
Yeah. Mike, that's actually all I got. Anything else before we work on getting out of here? Yeah.
This was week three. Just want to confirm.
we have checked with our sources in the industry, and they have confirmed it was week three, in fact.
Yes.
Week four coming up this week. And if I'm not mistaken, like we said earlier, there is a Friday night game. It is really, like, absolutely messing with me, Mike, that we don't get college football on Thursdays anymore, except we do.
Oh, except... A big one.
In Blacksburg, as, again, your Hokies hosting the West Virginia Mountaineers. Once again, might be the...
God intended.
The ineligible game to see who isn't going to make a bowl game. But that'll be fun on Thursday night instead of watching whatever nonsense NFL game is on. And then Friday night, Virginia at Syracuse. So a couple of really good games to talk about in the weeknight. And then a pretty good slate on Saturday as well, where... you can assume that Georgia Tech will still be running out Jeff Collins and his band of merry men or whatever circus he's got going there on Saturday in Orlando against UCF at the Bounce House. So we'll see how that goes.
And his band of merry men. Happy holidays.
Go to your book, check your local listings, and get tickets in on UCF early, I would recommend. Because that line is not going to get smaller. It's already at 16.
Nope.
It is not.
16 already.
On that note, Mike, you want to work on getting out of here?
Oh, yeah.
We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify, all those good places. Find us on Twitter at FTRSJoey, at Mike McDaniel SI, together at BC Podcast ACC. Send us an email with your questions, comments, concerns, the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Yeah, we got a couple hanging out in there. We'll get to those one of these days, I swear. They're still there. We know it. Mike, where else can they find us in the social medias?
Facebook.com/basketballconferencerateReview. Find all of our podcasts there, sir.
Please do. Please do. Keep it tuned here. If there is a firing from, I don't know, just any sort of school, such as Smorgasbord, in the ACC, it rhymes with that. There'll probably be a pretty emergency, possibly solo, possibly tandem podcast. We'll see. But keep it tuned here. We will keep you updated as the fall develops with more games. Mike, have a good night. Get some rest. We will talk about week four very soon. It is week four, I swear.
Yes, sir. Week four. Not week three. I'm stupid.
We are getting dangerously close to some pretty in-depth ACC play, so that'll be fun when we get there. Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Mike, have a good night. We'll talk soon.
You too, bye.
All right. For that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon to preview week four. And until then, go ACC.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginnings. And